Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcasts.
Antiques.
Together, at last.
What antiques we talk about this week?
Well, you know, I've been kind of on a tear lately.
Wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah, this is about Shawn Michaels. Because he's old now. Shawn Michaels is going to come fucking suplex me through the wall. Anyway. No, cast iron. Much like the biceps of our beloved wrestle boys.
Cast iron?
I've been talking about cast iron a lot lately.
You have.
And I don't want to stop.
Never stop.
I won't. So, today we're going to be talking about different kind of cast iron. I had to check the archives to make sure we didn't cover this already. We're going to talk about the saddest of irons.
Sad iron?
Sad irons.
What kind is sad?
Do you know about sad irons?
Wait, is this... Listen, I haven't worked for 15 years in the antiques industry.
No, but you do a lot of research.
I know about andirons.
Okay, well, I guess you're going to learn a lot about sad irons
today. Is it actually what's called sad iron?
They are. That is its actual name, yes.
I thought you were doing a comedy bit, and I was just racing through my head trying to think of what form of iron would be particularly depressed.
No, this isn't a bit. They're called sad irons.
What the fuck are they?
Oh, this is even better than I could have hoped. But
I was like, is a horseshoe sad? If you, like, turn upside down, it's kind of frowny?
Do you know, what is an iron? Why is it sad?
Yeah, I want to know all of these things, yes.
Well, it's a clothes iron. Begin to demystify.
For ironing clothes?
Yep. A device that is heated and used to press clothes to remove creases, as defined by Wikipedia.
But why is it sad?
We're getting there. Now, an iron was mostly named for the metal it was made out of. Makes sense.
You don't say. Next, you'll be telling me that the Indian Ocean is named for its proximity to the subcontinent India.
Absolutely not. I can't believe you would say that to me. Please.
Did you know that the Thames is a river in London?
Did you know? I didn't know that. I don't know anything. Except about Saturn. All I know. Did you know that the Thames is a river in London?
Fucking. That was a footnote in a fucking Sherlock Holmes book. It's like, fucko. Even if I didn't already know that the Thames is in fact a river in London, I figure like the fact that they're on a river in London in a fucking boat and talking about the Thames, I think context would include me in there.
Context clues? I never met her.
Fucking hell. Anyway.
So, like most things, first century China actually invented clothes irons.
They realized that their clothes were wrinkly, and they were like, what if we fixed this?
Well, actually, probably throughout most of the history of garments, people have been trying to get the wrinkles out. I can't figure out fucking why, but the thing is, they were just kind of hitting it with stones and wood and stuff. But since China's constantly, like, on the cutting edge of civilization while everyone else is learning to wipe their ass, they had big metal pans that they filled with coals and passed over the cloth to straighten it. At the same time, people were using, like I just alluded to, smoothers or slick stones, which is a word I hate.
Slick stone?
I don't want to think about it. No, I know. There's light behind your eyes, and you are not going to do that to our listeners.
No?
You are not. I forbid it. message us privately if you want to know what Ken's talking about, or he'll say it right now.
It's just... You've been telling me a lot about your WrestleBoy fanfiction.
You're just going to say that on air? That's a clue. Everyone who's ever read fanfiction is like, oh god, no. So they were slick stones made from glass and stone. They were used, but not used hot.
Are you saying they were a cold stone?
They were cold stone.
Were they stone cold?
They were stone cold.
These slick stones?
And they definitely stunned the fabric into submission.
So you're saying this stone that was cold was particularly slick?
I'm gonna stop you right there, buddy. I'm gonna... That was the brakes on the train of thought.
It takes like miles for a train to fully stop,
oh,
right?
Yeah, well, that's just me figuring how this is gonna go. But I'll have you know the brakes are engaged, and we have about 20 miles of carnage to get through.
So tell me more about these cold slick stones.
Oh boy. Well, we're getting away from the stones we're talking about. Later, we'd have stretching racks and rollers for big pieces of linen and lots of linen. Kind of like a torment rack. Torture rack.
There you go.
But for your sheets.
A torture rack for your sheets.
Hey, Bowl and Branch, you can have that one for free, but contact me. These are generally owned by, you know, the aristocracy, because people generally didn't have that much linen that they need to think about it that hard, other than the aristocracy. There were also machines and or paddles called mangles. I could not figure out why they were called that.
The Mangler!
Is this a wrestle thing?
No! It's the greatest story Stephen King ever wrote.
I don't think he was writing it about flattening clothes. Well, actually, I don't know with that guy.
Well, that's what a mangler does.
Flattens clothes?
It's part of the laundry process.
Oh, you knew this and I didn't, huh?
Yeah, it's a early laundry machine.
Huh.
And it mangles. And if you're Stephen King, you have written a hallway that is just as wide as a mangler is, so the mangler could come to life and chase people down.
Oh my god, that's Stephen King's story. You know what? Wow. That panned out exactly like the way I was joking it would.
How the actual fuck did you ever forget?
I don't read Stephen King.
It should have gotten a goddamn Pulitzer Prize.
I don't read Stephen King. Someone told me the ending of The Dark Tower and I just never did it.
Really?
Yeah. When I started reading The Dark Tower. So, you know, that's how I work. But yeah, manglers were early clothes flatteners, for lack of a word. Say irons, I guess, because that's what we're talking about, but...
Early horror tropes, yes.
Early horror tropes. That was actually the mangling machine. God, why did they call it that? Do you know?
I don't, but I'm going to take an educated guess and say because of what happens when you drop a person into it.
Well, so Stephen King figured out anyway.
Yeah. He used to lurk in a laundry.
Oh my god, he just can't stop putting things in, like, I got hit by a van. This is about a haunted van. I had to work in a laundry. This is a haunted laundry machine.
I had to buy a hotel and kill my wife and child.
That one's different, I guess.
I had to meet a clown in a sewer.
That happened to him. That's real. Don't make fun of him. These are actually inspired by mangle boards, which make even less sense when you think about not knowing where that word comes from. And they were just flat pieces of wood that you smoothed over your fabric until it was smooth. Eventually they would turn into mangling machines, which are not unlike those fabric torture racks. There were box mangles, which, hate the sound of that. Eventually, by the 12th century, I even brought that up.
I'm still waiting to learn why the iron was so fucking sad.
By the 12th century, we're getting there. This is like a long story about how sad iron is. It's not long, we're getting to the sad irons next. By the 12th century, trade with China had introduced the idea of heating up your metal for ironing, which is kind of fucking bonkers.
That no one had figured out.
There were metalsmiths at that point. We're post-Bronze Age. But nobody had, like, put that together until, like, someone went to China. They're like, you'll never believe this shit is class. They are so smooth. Holy shit. So... From then on, metalsmiths started making these really, the word is gone,
smooth? Hot?
Rudimentary.
Slick.
Gross. I'm gonna, meet me behind the Denny's, man, it's coming.
They're open 24/7, we can do this anytime.
Rudimentary irons. Basically just chunks of metal that were flat on the bottom. By the 17th century, we had developed the sad iron. Or the flat iron.
But why is it sad?
Here we go. That actually comes from the Middle English term for heavy or solid. Originally sold.
I'm going to murder Middle English.
Yeah, so it was sold and then I guess it just got clipped to sad. So sad iron. And it just didn't change from there for some reason. You actually hear a lot of, like, mythology that it's like, oh, because whoever had to do the ironing was, like, invariably depressed about it, which... True.
I mean, yeah, I can relate, but...
Well, especially back then, but it's got nothing to do with it. It's just an unusual... Just funny how words work, huh? So Middle English did that to you, so you can be angry at it. For a little while, they were considered something of a kind of a luxury. Just because, you know, smithing was expensive. But then, what happened, Ken?
Prozac for irons?
What?
So they stopped being sad.
Oh, you're just focusing on the sad thing, huh?
Uh-huh.
It's the Industrial Revolution happened.
Oh, fuck. It done snuck up on me.
Yeah, it came up right behind you, and now you have the consumption.
No.
So, after the Industrial Revolution, they became cheap and mass-produced. Now, sad irons had a lot going on for them in terms of ironing. They were good at it. They're hot. They flat. They heavy. But they need to be meticulously cleaned and maintained. I don't know if you've ever rubbed metal on stuff, but if it's not clean, it gets pretty nasty pretty quickly.
I was gonna say, it also probably coming into contact with water?
That actually won't be happening yet.
Really?
Wait,
so we're just pressing hot, dry metal on our clothes?
Yes, we are.
So we're just burning our clothes?
Yes, essentially, yes.
Alright. Carry on.
They need to be waxed, too, otherwise they would stick to clothes. Also,
this was an improvement.
Also, they were, hey, heavy. Also, they were pointed in the front to navigate around details. But they were just a bit of cast iron in a triangle shape with a handle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you notice about what I just said?
Murder weapon?
The whole thing was iron, including the handle.
Oh, hang on. Hang on. Small flaw in this plan. I can see why whoever did the ironing was so goddamn sad.
So put a pin in that.
Okay.
But so usually to do iron, you would have to wrap it in a cloth or like a some kind of something.
Yeah.
But this would frequently cause fires. So you like and either this... way you were getting burned. So that's fun.
And this was the best system we had to date.
This was a breakthrough.
All right.
So eventually, as fashion evolved, you'd get all sorts of irons and lots of shapes and sizes. You get sleeve irons, muff irons, collar irons, ruff irons, fluters, made to iron crisp ruffles into clothing, top hat irons. Also, you made little irons for kids.
Oh no.
Well, hey, you have to do something with little fuckers.
Is it not just smaller because children's clothes are smaller? Is it for intended by use of children?
Intended use for children. This is a time when toys are just training kids for what they're going to be doing later.
I mean,
which is work.
Same thing now.
You know, I don't actually think I didn't join the military after playing Battleship is the one thing.
Well, then marketing failed.
I also haven't killed anybody, and I used to play Clue a lot.
But you have been to a lot of wealthy people's manors.
Yes.
After someone has died.
Yes.
To collect a bunch of their belongings.
Hey, I'm legally required to stop you right there.
Belongings such as candlesticks.
Listen.
Perhaps in libraries.
Maybe, but mostly the conservatory. Anyway. So, as I've alluded to before, these irons were heated directly in a fire or on a stove.
Yeah. Just get your hand right in there.
Sometimes, very rich people who had servants would have a stove dedicated to the express purpose of heating multiple sad irons.
A special sad iron stove.
A special sad iron stove.
Right on.
Because while they were very hot, they cooled off pretty quickly. So you would be working for a really long time if you didn't have a constant rotation going. So if you could afford to, you would have a constant rotation going.
Just as many chunks of pointy iron on fire as possible at once.
It's imperative that we have no less than 3 hot irons hanging around.
All right.
So sad irons tended to weigh between 6 and 12 pounds, and a tailor's sad iron would weigh up to 60 pounds. Depending on what they needed to press.
Taylors are fucking buff.
Taylors are so jacked you don't even understand. So these also included a decorative trivet to put down and not burn everything. The efficacy of this is questionable given that you were also wrapping it in cloth.
Hmm.
And pressing it to cloth. But hey, we're trying our best. Eventually they would try to make handles that in some way alleviated the problem of being made of metal. Like you get these hollow spirals. You get them, like, excessively thin, which I don't know how physics hadn't been invented yet, so they didn't understand that that actually made the problem, like, 40 times worse. So on and so forth.
Thermodynamics hoops.
Thermodynamics? I barely know her. So what are we gonna do? Everything's on fire. Everything's on fire. Oh my god, everything's on fire.
We're going to open a shirtwaist factory.
What?
It's a very grim joke about labor.
Now is the worst time everything's on fire. We can't open a shirtwaist factory. It's all on fire. What are we going to do? I'll tell you what we're going to do. Because you're just going to say open a shirtwaist factory again. Open a second shirtwaist factory, I'm sure. We are going to meet a very special woman who mysteriously enters the story something like 300 years after it becomes necessary. Mary Florence Potts.
Mrs. Potts?
Actual Mrs. Potts. She was born September 1850. She was poor. And nobody knows anything really else about her.
Because she was poor.
Her early life. She ended up marrying a disabled Civil War veteran. he couldn't work.
Because that whole disabled war veteran thing.
Yeah. Mary had a solution. She became the sole provider for her family when, at 19, she invented a new sad iron. It was pointed at both ends.
What?
I need you to understand that we traded with China in the 12th... I don't want to detract from Mrs. Potts' contributions.
Wait, what if we could go both ways?
Yeah,
What if backward and forward?
It took hundreds of years for a woman to say, hey, wait, conceivably iron could be any fucking shape, yeah?
What if we, instead of, like, turning the whole dang thing around every time, we just...
What if it was pointed both ways? So that's great. She also thought...
I love Mrs. Potts.
Hey, what if it stopped burning our clothes? She envisioned a sad iron that was a hollow metal with thin sides and a thick bottom. And it was filled with cement or clay so that it wouldn't heat all the way through, just at the base, where it was important. It also promoted a more even heating.
Holy shit, she finally invented thermodynamics.
She finally did. Her dad actually ran a plaster company, which is what inspired her, so the early models were filled with plaster, because all of these materials are poor conductors of heat. And the kicker, she made a detachable wooden handle.
I like the part where it's not made of iron.
It isn't.
I would prefer it were of a less flammable material.
Hey, we'll get to that. Put a pin in that one.
Okay.
Now that we've gotten to the pin about the handle being made of metal, it's not made of metal.
That's, well, it's a step sideways, at least.
Well, actually, the wood handle was incredibly safe. This changed the game. The ironing game.
I feel like, okay, so I feel like by the latter half of the 19th century, we were already familiar with the concept of handles made of wood for, like, other tools, such as hammers and shovels and what have you.
Wild about that, huh?
Yeah.
Again, not to detract from Mrs. Potts, but, like, it feels like maybe she shouldn't have been, like, someone could have done this before. But I guess we can't solve all of history's mysteries. Yeah, crazy about that, huh? Like, wood handles weren't exactly a novelty by the 1870s.
No, I would say they were prevalent.
Mm.
Anyway.
She patented it, which means literally nobody had even fucking thought of it before.
And then Singer stole her patent?
No.
No?
No, she actually maintained that patent until her death.
Dang.
You could not burn your fucking hand. Incredible. It would heat the iron and not the handle. Incredible. The heat would be more evenly spaced. Incredible. It actually cut down a little bit on the weight. Incredible. You could switch the handle easily to a preheated iron when the first one cooled.
Very handy. We can swap out the handles.
The handle never has to be hot.
My God.
So with help from her father, she started selling this herself for not even a whole year before she ended up franchising out to the Philadelphia's American Machine Company. This is before women can vote. She has invented an actual solution to a huge problem. It is, we will find in the ensuing years that it is actually much, much safer. And she has managed to franchise it in a manner that is beneficial to her and her family. So, I like her. She called herself an inventress, which was cute.
Aww.
She invented a bunch of other stuff, but there isn't actually a lot of information because they were outmoded very quickly. So, the American Machine Company packaged it as a wooden handle, Mrs. Potts' handle, and three iron bases. So it would be a great anniversary gift, or a lot of people got it as a wedding gift. Eventually it would become a standard part of a dowry. They made the handles and the bases proprietary, because of course they did, and it immediately took the hell off. It was displayed at the 1876 Philadelphia World's Fair, won several awards, and also the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, where it continued to win several awards. Maybe H.H. Holmes pressed his clothes with one.
Please, he did not press his own clothes.
I am legally required to mention him every time we talk about the Chicago World's Fair.
Yes, this is true.
He's got a gun in my head right now. He says, talk about me, H.H. Holmes. I think it's pretty stunning that 20 years could pass and people would still be like, can you believe this iron? They were doing that. I tried to find this image, I could not. A late 1800s advertisement for the detachable handle shows a woman flinging her hot-handled sad iron to the floor and screaming, barbaric relic, I discard thee! I couldn't find that one, but I found a bunch of the other advertisements for Mrs. Potts' handle, and oh my god, they are incredible. Get ready for a whole album's worth, because I am in love.
Please put it on the Facebook, I need to see this.
I will. I will. So, lots of time passes. We get to 1906. What was that you were saying about a less flammable handle?
good idea. Do that.
Well, we have just the thing for you, Ken.
Is it early plastics?
It's not early plastics.
Oh, thank God.
We took the handle and we filled it with asbestos! Woo!
No!
Whoa, the skin of the salamander does not please you?
No!
Woo! No. The handles are full of asbestos!
No, that's not, no!
No! What? I don't know what you're upset about. Asbestos is incredibly fireproof.
Technically, sure.
Mesothelioma? I hardly know her.
Fuck!
So you got your wish. These actually would hang on until about the 1940s, when plastics and the burgeoning availability of electric appliances would take over. So, careful what you wish for, buddy. Oh, I want it to be fireproof.
No.
Do you?
My hubris! My hubris!
That's right. If you worked in the asbestos, it's Ken's fault. He did this to you.
No.
So, later, sad irons would try to employ other heating methods. It was still pretty annoying to have to heat your irons individually. So humans did what they did best and made a bunch of... Made an expansive series of horrible mistakes that will only get worse the more I talk about them. First, you would have self-heating sad irons. If that made your stomach clench, get ready. For example, a hollow box sad iron that you would fill with coals.
So it's like a warming pan.
It's like a warming pan. Now, the trouble with that is you need the iron for longer than you need a warming pan generally. The coals needed to be, like, fanned. So they had a spout to which to attach bellows. That's fine, although it did have the unpleasant habit of belching smoke and discoloring the clothes, but some of them were actually designed to aerate by being swung wildly to and fro.
So you have a pointy iron object full of fire that you're just whaling around the room at random?
Oh, it weighs about 20 pounds.
So how many accidents?
Oh, tons.
Oh, no.
So how are we going to make this safer? Oh, side note, sidebar, some of those did look like dragons. They had, like, a little escape spout that looked like a little dragon. That's very cool.
I want it.
I still don't want one fucking swinging at me, because someone's trying to heat up the coals.
Fire cannot kill a dragon.
It can kill a soft head, and that's what I've got. Later, people would play with all kinds of other fuels for the sad iron.
They're playing with fire, you say?
Are they ever? Picture, if you will, a sad iron. You got a picture, right? It's just a chunk of metal iron.
It's an iron. It's sad.
Put a tank on it.
A tank?
Yeah, a little tank that feeds into it. A combustion tank. Fill the tank with kerosene.
No!
It's on fire!
No!
No?
No!
Ethanol?
No.
Whale oil?
No.
Natural gas?
No.
Acetylene?
No.
Wired directly into your gas line for lights?
Absolutely not!
Too bad! We did all of those things!
No!
Did you want an acetylene iron?
I did not!
They actually had these little miniature combustion engines.
Why?
Some of them used gasoline.
I don't need a gas-powered clothes iron. No.
But it stayed hot.
Okay.
You get one guess of the major drawback words with these.
They don't stop being hot?
They weren't very good at containing the liquid.
Hmm.
They had a really bad habit of overheating and then spewing the accelerant. Especially with the gas-powered ones, the ones that would hardline in if you had the pipes for it, because gas-powered appliances were a thing. You know, very well.
Who designed these?
Various people. We actually don't have a lot of patents for them.
Because my money was going to be on men who never had to do their own laundry.
Precisely.
Ah.
That part, I can guarantee you. Because you'll actually get a bunch of other incredibly dangerous ironing devices that were also designed by men. They won't become safe until science advances, or in the case of Mrs. Potts, someone who had to do the ironing thought it up. The problem is that, hey, do you want to guess how long these, like, these contained self-heating irons lasted?
2 weeks?
These sold steadily until the 1940s.
No.
Well, because the problem was, even though electricity had become standard at that point, there were still lots of places where electricity was either too expensive or difficult to access.
True.
You're thinking, that's still true of a lot of places. You're thinking Appalachia.
Any place not in a city and not owned by rich people, basically.
Which there was a lot of in the 1940s, and it still exists. Those people needed a method to iron their clothes, so you would buy a coal-hod sad iron.
No.
Sad irons are actually still used today in areas that it is difficult for whatever reason, to get electricity to.
Homesteading mommy bloggers?
No, mostly underdeveloped nations.
Oh, okay.
I mean, underdeveloped, there's gotta be a better term for it, but you know what I mean. So, Electric Islands will debut in 1882. This is a side note because I thought it was deeply funny. It was patented by Henry W. Seeley. He used a resistively heated electric iron with a smooth plate. Didn't do so well because 1882, electricity was still kind of a novelty for most people.
Debatable.
So we're talking the common rabble.
I
said it did poorly, not that it didn't sell.
You know how I am about the Victorians and electricity.
I know. I should have been more specific. It didn't take off the way Mrs. Potts' iron did.
Well, no.
Because it didn't work for everybody. France copied this immediately. We actually don't know who did this, but they used a carbon arc iron that, at its immediate display, was too dangerous to even be a commercial possibility.
Oh my god.
We are talking immediate electric shock and death by iron.
Oh no.
And displays like that lent themselves to people's distrust of home appliances out of electricity.
Yeah.
Carbon arc iron, just that a bit.
Well, the great thing about iron is that it doesn't conduct electricity.
Now, when I say it wasn't made of iron anymore.
No, I know. It's just, Jesus.
Electric irons would continue to hobble along until the 1920s when they could be fitted with thermostats.
Yay.
Because the electric irons were almost harder to keep the heating stable in than the ones filled with fucking coal. Because at least you could control how much coal you put in the damn thing. Thomas Sears invented the electric steam iron in 1926, and nobody ever looked back.
I just love that only after the demise of steampunk technology and the rise of electricity do we get a steam iron.
It's possible that people were using steam before, but it's not likely. Now, another very fun sidebar. I did not know, until dipping my toe here, that the Elizabethan collar, the ruffle, was actually done with ironing. It would be starched and ironed. And there were special tools to do this. They were called goffering irons. And they basically just look like big metal bullets on sticks that you would make very hot and then painstakingly roll the ruffles into the collar. There's also crimping and fluting irons for smaller ruffs. That's so fucking cool.
So stupid.
It's so stupid. And typical of the Victorians, there was a specialty iron for most things you could think of. As I touched upon before, there is at least two designs for an iron specifically for your top hat. Yes, just the one kind of hat.
Oh no.
So that's the rough history of irons.
It's...
And why they're sad.
It's beautiful.
They're sad because they've never not been killing people. And they wish they could stop, but they won't.
And on that note...
Do you want some?
Sure.
Let's talk about it. This is a quote by Jimmy Walker. I wanted to include it because it's the funniest thing I've ever read. After getting a core collection of common irons, acquire a hunger for rare and special irons. Jimmy Walker.
Texas Ranger?
No, just a guy who likes irons, if you could believe.
I can believe.
Can you believe? Big surprise, unusual designs are everyone's favorite. You want to go big money, you go for fanciful designs.
Dragons, 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 dragons.
The dragons sell incredibly well.
Dragons.
There are duck shapes, dragon necks. Birds perched on the tip are actually pretty common. There are ones that just have really ornate scroll work and decorations like that. The trivets, a trivet that is richly decorated, will be very, very handsome in price and appearance. For example, there is the Barnes Swan-on-Swan.
Swan on swan?
Yeah, you get one guess what that looks like.
Is it a swan on a swan?
It's exactly that.
Incredible.
It is a swan with another swan on its back.
Who could have possibly foreseen?
Now, as you had guessed before, the Barnes Swan on Swan was designed by a man, and maybe 10 were made, because it is a bad iron.
Are you saying that the swan stacked on top of a swan shape is not conducive to ironing?
No. Because only 10 exist, it is actually considered one of the, holy grails of the sad iron world. I believe one sold at auction for something like $30,000.
Fuck.
This is similar with the E.B. Crosby steam locomotive iron, which I included just because trains are cool.
This is true.
Maybe 3 exist. And of that, 2 are prototypes.
Oh no. What happened to train?
Well, it turns out, E.B. Crosby is a man.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that if you make your iron a faithful replica of a steam engine, it actually sucks to hold and use with the hands.
Wait. Wait, hang on. How faithful are we?
Well, I'm glad you asked. And here it is.
Okay, so I can't help but notice that instead of a flat bottom...
Oh, it's train-shaped?
Yes. Yeah, it has wheels, and they're very narrow wheels. Like, they're not even steamroller wheels, so they can't help you iron.
They cannot.
So he just made a toy train, threw a handle on top, and said, this we can iron with.
Yes. Can you believe that most people looked at it and said, I cannot iron with that?
This man's an idiot.
In the original drawings, he included the sharp, like, spikes that protrude up. Meaning he didn't even actually think about how a hand would touch it.
Oh, like all the little stovepipey, whistly, fiddly bits that come out of the top of a steam engine?
Jutting directly into the part where your hand would be. It's good design!
Engineers, man.
pictured is actually one of the liquid engine irons. Very safe looking, as you can see.
Now, when you say liquid engine, I'm assuming the liquid is gasoline?
That's an acetylene, actually.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's just a little propane tank on an iron.
Yes. And there's a fire right there, inside it.
There's no way this could possibly go wrong.
There's several ways it could go wrong. Boy, howdy, and it did it ever continue to go wrong. Thank you for saving us, electricity. So, limited. You look for fanciful designs and limited numbers. But you already knew that.
So the less useful it is as an iron, the more worthwhile it is as an antique?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
God, isn't that, it always works out that way? Age can be considered too. For example, the closer you can get to, like, a hand-smithed iron from before the Industrial Revolution, obviously very valuable. To quote Jimmy Walker, who's my new best friend, an iron still revealing the mark of a hammer speaks the drama of its creation in every line.
Sure.
The man had feelings about irons.
I can believe.
Sizes to be taken into account. Any unusually sized iron. God help you, a large tailor's iron if you can lift it. if you find one. But especially, more people can handle these. Toy irons. A toy iron is any iron that's 4 inches or less. Now, they weren't all manufactured as toys for children, and we're using the word toy loosely because many of them were functioning. Some of them were small to do specialty pieces. You kind of have to use your best judgment to tell those apart. But they are very desirable, the little ones. Especially if they come with their matching trivets. Matching trivet skyrockets the value almost double. You also want to look for unusual adaptations, I mentioned before. Handles that were slotted for ventilation and airflow. Spiral upright handles. Coiled handles. Irons that do more than one thing.
Oh no.
Yeah. There were some irons that were structured. I couldn't find too many examples, but like there was a side that you could use for crimping and a side for ironing. That sort of thing. And like I said, not all irons and trivets are a matched set, but if it came with a trivet, it will be worth everything to you to have them together. Would you like to know about determining authenticity?
Sure.
Pretty much all your standard cast iron rules apply, so if you're tuning in for the oomph time...
Satin smooth finish, no mold marks.
You got it. I'll run you through if you're just tuning in to me talking about iron for entirely too long. New iron tends to be rough, coarse, grained, pitted, and poorly finished. Like Ken said, you're looking for a satiny smooth finish. Fine detailing. New iron tends to be gray, and if it's rusted, it will be bright orange. Old iron oxidizes black, you're probably familiar with that. Mold inconsistencies and poor detailing. The originals, the antique ones, will have nice sharp crisp details. The refabricated ones lose the detail in the copying. Again, smaller size and reproductions, you get mold shrinkage, that happens. Inappropriate or missing gate marks. You will usually see gate marks on older pieces, although sometimes this actually requires being familiar with a specific piece and where the gate marks would have been on the original. Luckily, this is a well-documented field of study and you will have lots of examples. Mismatching and crooked seams. Just, again, general quality markers. Inconsistent details. For example, if you are looking at a slug sat iron, which was an iron much like the coal box that just had another chunk of iron that you put in so you could swap them out, the originals will have grooves to keep the chunk of iron from directly touching the surface and overheating. Reproductions tend to lack that. And I can't help you with brass irons because oof, oh my god, brass is too easy to reproduce. Consult with an expert.
Now, is brass a better heat conductor or less likely to catch fire or is it just shinier?
Shinier.
Good to know.
For trivets, antique trivet designs, again, larger than the reproductions. Their legs should always be greater than an inch in length.
to keep from burning the surface they're placed on.
Yep. Shorter than that, they tend to be reproductions because, again, when people are reproducing things, they don't think about the use. You also just want to look for signs of wear. Sometimes you can actually see trivets that have sagging, unevenness, anything that shows that it was used. Sprues, wedge marks, mold marks, gate marks, all of those.
Gatekeeper marks.
Actually, if you could see a gate mark on an original trivet, it tends to be pre-1890, because gate marks tend to be ground off after 1890. But again, you can see the ground off gate marks, which is different from not having a gate mark. And that's pretty much it. It's a really, really fun field. There is such a wide range of prices that it's pretty easy to get into it. And if you are mysteriously one of those rich people we're constantly slandering on this podcast, A, send me your money. B, there are also really, really rare and pricey examples.
Hey, such as dragon?
Such as dragon. Actually, dragon's not the most pricey one I can think of.
I'm assuming train is most pricey.
Train and swan on swan. But yeah, if you are interested in sat irons, if you love, you know, kitschy, like, kitchen antiques or, like, homemaker antiques, I know that's a cool thing with people, you can get a lot of entry-level ones for, like, $10 and $20. You can get some pretty ones for around $50 and thereabouts. And if you want to get serious, it climbs in pretty much increments like that, where you go to the hundreds, the several hundreds, to the thousands. So it's fun. It's fun, and like a lot of things that are accessible, it's because they were useful items, and there are so many.
I'm comparing the convenience of an iron collection to some other items, such as like souvenir spoons and postcards. Maybe easier to store and transport.
That has never stopped anyone. I think sat iron collecting is actually one of the larger copies out there.
Dang. Could be stamps, but no.
I think stamps is, like, statistically one of the more popular ones.
I mean, I say it could be stamps, but I'm over here being like, I would collect furniture if I could.
You absolutely would, yes. If you could, you would probably have a reproduction of the Glass Palace.
The Crystal Palace?
The Crystal Palace.
If I could rebuild the Crystal Palace, you know. You fucking know.
Oh, I know.
In a goddamn heartbeat.
Absolutely. So you can't really judge people who collect irons.
Honestly, okay. If it was between Crystal Palace and Cragside, I would rebuild Cragside.
Wow, okay, I wasn't expecting that.
Cragside had the first hydroelectric power in 1870s.
Oh, so your big nerd overwhelmed your sense of, like...
It did. It also had a little elevator.
That's pretty fun. Do you have any questions about irons? Jeremy Irons?
When's Aragon 2?
I have to go. Bye, Jeremy Irons.
Bye. Thank you for stopping by. No, I think you have been exhaustive on the subject of irons. Very well done.
Thank you. Big shout out before I get into other sources, also because it's the funniest goddamn thing. Irons by Irons by David Irons.
Branding.
I swear to fucking God, it's literally called that. It is a great resource for lots of detailed information on irons by David Irons.
Uh-huh.
You see, I saw a chance and he took
Amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Other sources include WhiteRiverValleyMuseum.org, an article called Sat Irons, OldAndInteresting.com, Antique Iron Smoothers and Manglers.
I want to see what's on OldAndDisinteresting.com.
Just pictures of Nixon. HomeThingsPast.com, asbestos sat irons.
No.
EstateSales.net, collecting sat irons. CollectorsWeekly.com, sad and flat irons. RealOrRepro.com, pressing irons. And Coup de Grasse, because we can't have a single episode go by without one, PressingIronAndTrivetCollectors.org in its generality. Please refer to them for more detailed information, a list of experts, and if you really want to get deep down, these are the people to get in touch with. My God. That's PressingIronAndTrivetCollectors.org. What a get on the URL.
Incroyable. If you would like to email us your wrestling fanfiction, you can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, where, God willing, Dee will be posting photos of all these irons, because
they will sound
amazing.
The promotional material is incredible.
If you would like to purchase a fine variety of vintage goods, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/slop.
No, it's... No, you got it.
Etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. We did it.
We did it. We nailed it.
And you can also, for deleted scenes, hit up our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month. If you have joined the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, and there is a month where you do not receive a postcard, email us. Let us know.
Also, email us.
We will give you a postcard.
We will get you one. It will be sexy.
No.
No guarantees that it's sexy. Like, sexy.
It will, I can guarantee you it will be random. I cannot guarantee you it will be sexy.
Sexy in the general way that all old things are sexy.
Sure.
Sure.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes. And thank you, dear listener, for listening.
And if you love us very much, consider going down to whatever you're listening to this on and throwing us a 5-star rating or whatever star rating you think we deserve. But personally, I think it's 5. And help us get the word out.
3.5.
5. It's 10.
I rate this podcast train out of iron-shaped train.
You know what? That's the only rating I'll accept. But yeah, if you could do that, write us a review. It's monstrously helpful if you think other people should be listening to us. That is the way to do it. Thank you very much. I love you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.